was really focused on my action. And what I didn't pay attention is to my being energy. There was that voice, right? You're not good enough. There were a lot of emotions, the anger, the shame, the disappointment.
Hi, I'm Ebony, and I believe that stories change lives, and everyone has a story worth telling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we let our self-doubt get in the way of us writing our stories and sharing our stories. So that's why I created Motivation to Write as a source of motivation and inspiration to help writers like you and me share our stories with the world. So I talk to the experts ranging from entrepreneurs to marketers to authors to therapists to psychologists who share their knowledge and their advice to help writers like you and me step into our full potential.
Noah Ronan is a coach, speaker, and author who helps her clients dare to create change. She has over 20 years of experience in change management, human resources, and project management. Noah believes two primary energies help us thrive: the being energy and the doing energy. And when we don't balance the two, we feel stuck. Noah encourages writers, entrepreneurs, and leaders to lean into both the being and doing energies to create change in their families, careers, and communities.
I'm here with Noah Ronan.
Yes.
Okay. And I'm excited because Noah is an author and you have a book called Beyond Leadership, but you have an amazing story behind how you got to write this book in the first place.
Yeah.
A lot of apprehension about writing. And your main kind of, what you really do in this book, and it seems like in your career, is you help leaders walk their talk.
Is that yes, right? Okay. Yes. I actually, you know, kind of like help people to challenge the norms, you know, when they say, I'm supposed to do it this way, everyone is doing it another day, another way. So I say, is there a third way that we can do it? Is there a third or fourth solution that we can find that is your way?
Right.
And that's where they get excited, because many times we get lost in the, it has to be this way or another way. So I challenge them to challenge the norms of how we do things, right? How we, for example, here, how we write a book, there is the right way to write the book, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's where we get in our way. That's what I believe. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like thinking outside the box.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You're out of the box coach. Yeah. If you want, if you feel that you are challenged the norms. So I'm helping you to find your way to do that when it doesn't feel like, why am I so different than anyone else, everyone else? Yeah.
Yeah. And you also, you talk about the energy of being versus the energy of doing. We're going to get into that.
Yes.
I'm really excited. So why don't you just tell us a little bit about your background as a author?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about that story, how this book came to be.
So first I have to tell you, I'm honored that you call me author, an author, right? Because who thought one day I will say, hey, I'm also an author. That's exciting, right?
Yeah.
So thank you. I think you're the first time that someone is putting that attention on, oh, tell me how it is to be an author, and now you got there, right?
Yeah.
So you see, I'm blushing right now, and some people can, right? It's also on video. So here is the background story. When you hear me, you hear I have an accent. So many people, it's like, where is she from? Because I don't have that accent that you can say, you put the finger on. So I'm originally from Israel, and I want to put it a way that you can listen to the story and not try to figure out in your head, where is she from? So 15 years ago, my husband and I decided to move from Israel to New York City. That's where we started, for a job opportunity for my husband. We had then two little kids, and I was already an executive in an executive position. And before the move, I worked in human resources, training, and change management. So a lot of what I do and what I did was stand in front of people talking, and I knew I had that special gift, which was not writing, speaking. I knew that when I open my mouth and I speak, I can influence. And you know, some people, when I ask that, sometimes they say, do you remember in the playground that you knew that you are an influencer? And they were kind of like, yes, I knew that. So no. I remember in the playground not being, you know, as some people say, bossy, but I just knew that when I open my mouth, I can influence a group of people to mostly follow my ideas. And then we moved to the US. And English is my second language. The first language is Hebrew. And it's not like I didn't know English. So that's not, it's not like I was not able to speak. We use English a lot in Israel. Many high-tech companies communicate in English. So it's not like you are not using English, but you don't speak a lot in English. You might write in English. You might study in university in English, but you don't speak as much in English in Israel. Mm. And when I moved to the US and New York City, if people live there, they know the New Yorkers speak really fast.
Yeah.
And suddenly I felt handicapped. I felt that my gift, you know, my forte became my hurdle. Suddenly I am handicapped. I can't do what I was able to do before. And I was really, really frustrated. And I tried to force getting what I had in Israel in my before situation to have the same in my new situation. And I realized that it will take time. I had two little kids. It's a new country, new culture. You need to adjust. But okay, now let's make it happen. Mm-hmm. And for 5 years, I was really, really stuck. It wasn't like I didn't work, but when I worked, it wasn't fulfilling. It didn't feel like it's what I did before. It just felt small. It felt that it's not fulfilling more for me, that I can do what I want. And I remember looking in the mirror and saying, who are you? You used to be that get it done person, and suddenly you cannot bring results. What's going on with you? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And there was that moment that I got into a place where I just decided to surrender. I decided to kind of like my last cause in a way to try and apply for a certification in human resources, to do human resources in the US because I couldn't make it happen. So I said, okay, I will see it. And it takes months and it's a lot of money. And I took the exam and I failed. And I said, okay, I will do it again. And I sat again and started to, I took the exam again. But while taking the exam, something else happened. I started blogging, and we'll talk about it in a moment. Mm-hmm. But in the second time I took the exam, I failed again. Mm-hmm. And I was really close. I was like, if like 5, 6, 7 points from passing the exam. So if you need 400, mm-hmm. I was really kind of like very close with the not passing. So it was very, very painful.
Yeah.
You know, you get that number, you leave that exam center, and it's painful.
Yeah.
And I remember calling my husband and telling him the news and saying, I am done. I surrender. I am done with forcing everything to happen my way. Mm-hmm. And it's not working for me. So I need to take a pause and figure things out.
Mm-hmm. Noah, before, can I ask a question?
So yeah, sure.
In Israel, when speaking was like your gift,
yeah.
Claire, you were speaking in
Hebrew.
Hebrew
in my first language. Yeah, thank you for.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you came to the U.S., because your husband got a job out here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so in your new workspace in the US, like, was your English, you didn't feel confident in your English?
So it was, you know, even the workspace, it was an Israeli nonprofit. So I didn't need to speak a lot of English there, right? So I kind of like found my way not to deal with the English. And really what I can tell you now before we go into the blogging is that there was that mean voice that was telling me that English is not good enough.
Okay. Okay.
And that's how I self-sabotaged myself. So I would go to interviews and I would try to get different things, but that internal voice would tell me, your English is not good enough. Nice. You will never get it. Okay. Because remember, I was a human resources person, so I knew how to you know, go through interviews, but that voice was getting in my way.
Right.
And was I was self-sabotaging myself.
Right. So in trying to find a new job in the U.S., that's when that with the voices. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was really cruel and painful.
Yeah.
And then, and actually, you know, we're just there. We're a few days before the new year. So it was the night of the new year. And, you know, we have two little kids, so we don't go anywhere. And I just decide to launch a blog about being an Israeli mom in the US. Now, I was the must, you know, kind of like the, I was afraid of everything in that space of moving to the US. I had a lot of fears showing up, that fear voice that tells me there is no way you can do this, there is no way you can do that. And I made myself being stuck in so many ways. And, you know, now when I work with clients, that blog, it took me less than 2 hours to launch and start writing. And I will see people that want to start their podcast, want to start their blog, want to start their website. And it takes them months until they launch with it, right? It has to be perfect and it has to be this. And it 2 hours that blog was out. It's like, wham, bam, okay? And I just started like, I didn't write really before that. It was the first time. And I just like, this is what I'm going to write about. This is the new year and let's go.
Yeah.
And I started writing. I didn't even write in English. I wrote in Hebrew and I wrote about being an Israeli mom in the US. And suddenly, probably like what's happening to you with the podcast, people start responding and they start having conversations with me.
Yeah.
And they like what I write. And then Israeli magazines reach out to me, travel magazines, and say, hey, can you write about traveling with kids to New York City? That's awesome for us. And I say, yeah, sure, I can do that. I have three kids. Let's do it. And suddenly things show up on my way, and I'm being reminded that I am resourceful. That created a new connection. Mm-hmm. And what I know now that I didn't know then is that that blog was the first time I allowed my emotions to be processed. So this blog was really funny, but I had this baggage of emotions from frustration to anger to shame to whatnot, right? And suddenly this writing process allows me to be creative and process a lot of thoughts and a lot of emotions in a new, funny way. Mm. And that connection with people, it was really like, now I understand, you know, in relocation, there is a lot of sense of isolation. You feel alone many times. Mm-hmm. And that connection with people really reminded me that, hey, Noah, you are resourceful. You are creative. You are able.
Right.
And that was awesome. So that was the beginning. You know, when I look back, I say, okay, that was the beginning. The moment that I failed the test the second time was the beginning. You know, you don't see that when you are there, right? Yeah. But now when I reflect back many years later, I can tell you that was the beginning of the shift for me.
All right. So I love that story because when you didn't pass for the second time, a lot of people just see that, like experience that setback and want to give up. Or they might.
I did give up. I did give up.
But it just, so that blog, when you started that blog, it feels like, from what you were saying, that blog came out of this almost
frustration.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
And
yes.
So it was great how, I love the story of how like one thing unfolds. Like that setback actually was the catalyst for this blog, because you use that blog to process your frustration of your new experience in the United States. And then people start contacting you to write for them. I mean, that's like every blogger's dream to have people.
Right? And even beyond. So what happened is that then young families from that wanted to relocate to the same area, because we lived in Brooklyn, which became very hip for young families. So Israelis in New York City that wanted to move to that area, or Israelis in Israel that wanted to relocate, started contacting me and asking me what schools our kids should go to, you know, all that cool stuff. And then I said, that's it. I'm going to start my own business. I'm going to be a relocation consultant. So that's how it started, right?
Yes, yes.
So here is something I'm going to say before I'm going to tell you the rest of the story about what happened because of the blog. But what I do understand that this was the first time that I didn't force anything and I didn't have any intentions about what's going to be the, you know, there were no expectations. There was no, like, what's going to happen from this blog? I need to put that stress and pressure on myself like I did in the 5 years or so before that it's like, I need to do that to be successful. And I need to do that to go back to what I did in Israel. And I need to do, it was like a lot of force that I put on it. And suddenly I went to that creative Noah, that free Noah, that just allowing to see what's going to show up, that is just going for an adventure. Yeah. And suddenly things show up. And, you know, when we hear that, it's like, just go on your adventure. Just allow the journey to see what's going to unfold. It's like, no, I want to know what's going to, right? But that's what's cool about it, that those paradoxes in our lives, that when we let go and we just let things to unfold for us, then things show up in our lives. And that was one of probably the biggest lessons I learned from that blog.
Yeah. That's so, I had a guest on a couple of months ago. His name is Kuda Biza. He's also an author. And he talks about just being open to possibilities.
Yes.
Because you never know. Yeah, exactly.
I wanted the possibilities to be open to me, right?
Right. But I think once you start that blog, like you said, you didn't put all the pressure on yourself to have certain outcomes happen as a result of that. That to me is a demonstration of just being open. Like, let's just see what happens with this.
And
I love how you were kind of messy when you started. Like, you didn't have everything lined up, and you, sometimes you just have to go for it, and you can't just wait for everything to be perfect, because
it's like
it would never
how, be perfect. From all the words, using the word messy, I just love it because it's part of, by the way, part of my book, but my new blog, the one in English, I call it my messy blog.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay.
That's the name of my new blog, because I do believe, and that's what I try to, you know, you said walk your talk. So for me, walk my talk is walk the messy talk. And what I mean by that is that there is a difference between, as Brené Brown says, between I am messy.
Yeah.
And playing with messiness, right? So it's not the shame of, oh, I was messy. Oh, I don't like that. That sometimes we have that experience with messiness. For me, messiness is about experimentation. It's about when you are lost. I call the beauty of being lost. Mm-hmm. So for me, the beauty of being lost is that when we are lost, and that's what happened to me, we start to connect with ourselves and with others differently, and we allow experimentation and doing things that mostly we will not do, because we got into that place that nothing works for us. We tried everything in so many different ways and it just doesn't work, and we are so stuck that now we are open to try an experiment. So I call it the beauty of being lost. And thank you for using the word messiness, because it's part of what I believe and talk about and invite my clients to get messy. Mm-hmm. And for me, you know, when I vlog on LinkedIn, my videos are not, I don't have makeup there. It's after I run. So I'm sweaty and I'm red, and there is no makeup there. It's just me with my thoughts, not scripted, not rehearsed, to show people that there is a possibility to show up messy and still bring value to others. Mm. So that's about messiness.
I love that.
So just, I will finish the story about my blog quickly. Yeah. That will get to how I got to the book. Yeah. So the funny thing is that when I launched with the relocation website, the same week I launched, a few Israeli women from different states, they don't know each other, I never met them before, called me. And they said, we saw your website, we are reading your blog. How did you do that? We're so stuck with our lives. Can you coach me?
Mm-hmm.
Different women, same week. Mm-hmm. That was like, okay, there is, universe is telling me something, and I need to start listening to it.
Yeah.
And that's when I kind of like put the relocation aside, consulting, and I decided to go and see what this coaching is all about. I actually thought that coaching is a scam, but I was curious because, you know, when something like that happens, you say, I need to figure it out. So I got trained. It's not like I woke up the next day and I said, okay, I'm a coach now. I didn't coach those women, but a lot of what's happening today is because of those ladies that called me one after another that week. Hmm. And it was weird, really weird. So that's how I got into coaching.
Yeah.
And then when I started coaching, people heard my story and they said, where can we hear you talking? You're really interesting. Do you speak somewhere? And I said, come on. Again, English is my second language. I can do it in Hebrew, but in English? Eh. And they said, no, we really like listening to you. You should speak somewhere. So I joined Toastmasters, got messy there with kind of like practicing how to be better and polish my way of speaking in English and just get that confidence. And again, that voice, right? You're not good enough in English. Mm-hmm. And then when I started speaking, people said, so where is the book?
Oh, I love
it. And that's where I kind of like said, okay, that voice is, I lowered the volume of that voice and I can figure that out and I can write in English and I will just focus on my ideas. And then there was going to be an editor that will do the editing for me and still, and I it was very important to me that that editor will keep my voice, that it will not sound the American, actually, you know, not that American slick voice, but there is still my playfulness with how I play with words and ideas without making me that, you know, American, still have my different voice of and different way of writing, which was very important to me.
Yeah.
So that's how I got into writing my book.
Oh my gosh. Great. Story. Oh my goodness. Yeah. And that's the mark of a good editor is that they're able to maintain the voice of the writer.
Yeah.
So, okay. So you had people that were, it's just so amazing how these people kind of just came in your life and were guiding you to the next step. Like, can you help me figure out what you figured out? Oh, where can I hear you speak? Oh, you should write. Like, that's just, I love how that just
happened.
And you
know, part of what I feel is what I do today, my purpose, my mission is to remind people to believe in themselves. There were moments that I forgot to believe in myself. The person, I always have tears when I say that, the person that kept believing in me was my husband. Every time I would say, maybe I should do this, he said, no, keep going. You are good. You're good at what you're doing. You will get there. It will take you maybe longer, but I see you getting there.
Right.
And I had moments like he had to kind of like, it wasn't depression or anything, but moments that it's just hard when you have your own business, when you try to start again in a new country. Then we moved from New York to North Carolina, you know, starting again. He was like, you keep going. So he believed in me and having those other people believe in me too and seeing something in me before I was able to kind of like see that in myself or acknowledge that in myself is very interesting. And
yeah,
many times I shed that light on other people and I say, hey, I see that in you.
Yeah.
Don't forget and bring the colors back when they come black and white. Sometimes I say people come to me in black and white colors and when they leave, I see them again in that full color, being reconnected with who they are.
Right, so, right, right.
Yeah. So I think that's what writing really reconnected myself with the essence of who I am and reminded me that I am resourceful.
Yeah. And, you know, Dr. Oren Davis, the psychologist I was talking to, and he said, you know, a lot of times we just need to be open to the vision that other people have of us. Because a lot of times people can see something within us that we just cannot see. They can see the greatness that we cannot yet see within ourselves.
Yeah. I actually was challenged just today by another podcast host. He interviewed me twice and now he wants to do a series with me. And he said, it's going to be something avant-garde and you're going to be theatrical there. And I said, oh my gosh, what are you going to do to me? And I said, okay, you see something in me and I will connect with that part. So yes, yeah. Exactly what you are saying.
Yeah.
Very cool. Very yeah. cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, Noah, a lot of people like who grew up speaking English still have that voice.
Yes.
Like telling them.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't. So what do you say to some, like, how do you help people kind of get beyond that?
Yeah.
Self-criticism.
So that's really, you know, what my book is about. I call it Beyond Leadership from Awareness, right? That's how I like to play with words. So, right, there is awareness, yeah. but go from awareness to awareness. Mm. And in the middle, there is that awareness. Mm. So that's kind of like the idea of the book. And really what I learned from my own personal experience and working with others, and that's how I work with them, is that I believe that we all have two energies between us, kind of like the yin and yang. It's yeah. not like one is better than the other. They don't compete with each other. But some of us pay more attention to one energy than the other. And one energy, I call it the doing. Those are the actions. And many of us are doers because that's what we learned from very early age. Mm-hmm. Think about it. Our parents or teachers, they all told us, be a good girl, do your homework. Mm-hmm. Be a good boy, go clean up your room. So what is the formula that we are learning? That doing equals being good. So many of us focus on that, right? So, and we see at work, who's being promoted? The doers, right?
Yeah, yeah.
If I'm a B-air, as I call it sometimes, so maybe I believe I want, okay? So I need to focus on the actions. Now, on the other side, there is the being energy. It comes from human beings. So being for me is a container of the mindset, the thoughts, the emotions, the fears, the aspirations, all that good stuff, right? Yeah. Now, as you can see in my story, and I didn't really share a lot of that, but I was really focused on my actions because since very early age, I knew that if I come to an organization, I do my stuff, I'm being seen and being promoted and getting more projects. So I knew that for my actions, I'm being seen. I moved to the US, I used the same actions. But what happens in leadership or in new situations, like writing a first book, okay, or all those new experiences, like my relocation, is that the actions that worked for us before don't work for us anymore. Mm-hmm. When, you know, you see that in a lot of different situations. Doesn't matter, by the way, if it's a positive change or negative change. And we're now in the COVID-19. So many people see that the actions that worked before suddenly don't work in this right. new remote reality. And it's really hard. And what I didn't pay attention is to my being energy. There was that voice, right? You're not good enough. There were a lot of emotions, the anger, the shame, the disappointment, and walking with all that. And I walked for hours talking with myself, you know, pushing my son's stroller and talking to myself, what's going on with me? What's wrong? Why am I this? Why am I that? Are all these different emotions and thoughts and that mindset that I was in that was getting in my way. Mm-hmm. And the idea is to learn how to pay attention to your doing energy and to your being energy and mm-hmm. bring them together. It's not like the being is better than the doing or the doing is better. It's just learn how to pay attention to both. Mm. So, for example, if you mentioned people who are trying to write a book, so for me, it was a different experience there because I struggled so much until I got into writing the book that actually there was openness there and a different way of writing that engaged the doing and being together. And it was very at flow. But mostly what happens, because it's a new thing that we do. So all we do, and we don't think about the emotions or the fears that we have there. And we look at it and say, it's crap, right? Mm-hmm. So we stop. Or the other way around, it's like, I'm not good at it. English is my second language. You know, all those things we tell ourselves or all the emotions. I was never, no way I'm good as the other people on my writing group. I don't know, all those different emotions and thoughts that make us not to move into action. Mm-hmm. And that's why I call the being energy a force. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. a force that if we don't pay attention to, it can get in our way.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right?
So the doing,
yeah,
all of the actions and the being, those are the emotions
and thoughts and mindsets
and yeah. thoughts that can either drive the action or stifle the action.
Exactly. Okay. So they can take you high to the sky,
right?
Or they can just pause you or stop you. And by the way, not just you in a system, there can be other people that can stop you with their being energy as a system. So we're not going to go there. Mm-hmm. But this is something that when I work with leaders, I say, hey, you're pushing too much right now for change as a leader with the actions, and yeah. you ignore the being of the system. So people are slowing you down, right?
Yeah.
Or getting in your way. So you can think about that because you know, when we work in different situations, how sometimes people with their being energy stop others that are too much in their doing energy.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
we do the same with ourselves. So very simple example is in, you know, with athletes. Who's the one that's winning the game? You can have the same skills, the same strengths, but the one that will win the game is not because of their skills. Is because of the way they're thinking or how they pay attention to their emotions, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's the same with the writing. Do we pay attention to the emotions? How do we pay attention to the thoughts? Do we pay attention to the fears?
Mm-hmm.
So for example, now when I do more blogging right now, so when I write an article or a blog and I sit in front of the computer and nothing shows up, I know that there is something in my being energy that holds me from writing. So right now it mostly will be around purpose. I didn't understand yet the purpose of why I need to write that article. And that's what will make me stop and not write. Mm-hmm. So then I take some time, I go to a run, I speak with some people, I listen to a good podcast like yours, or read a good, you know, read something, and I get inspired because I heard something. And then there is like, okay, so this is why I want to write that. This is what's important for me about writing that. I connect myself with the purpose, with the meaning, and then the writing shows up.
Mm.
So that's what I see many times when people are not moving into action. They don't pay attention to their thoughts, to their emotions. So they are in that space of awareness. They're right. not aware, right?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I love how you brought up know your why. Because that's really important, because if you're not clear on why you're writing, when someone else reads it, first of all, you'll probably have trouble writing it as you've experienced.
Yeah.
And then once you finally, if you get something written without being clear on why you're writing it, whoever is reading it will not even be clear on like what is going on here. So it's so important to just know, like, what do you want people to do, think, or feel after reading whatever it is that you've written?
And if we don't know what we feel, think, and feel, how can we communicate that with them? And sometimes, you know, my book was an emerging book. So it wasn't like first you do this, then you do that. It wasn't like I had this all cooked process that I wanted to write, but I knew that there is an idea in my head and I still don't have a full understanding of what it is that I'm going to write.
Mm-hmm.
But I was fine with being in that exploration of just sitting in front of my computer and writing little stories.
Mm.
And sometimes I didn't even understand why I was writing that story, because I am a storyteller. So I wrote a story about me walking in the fields barefoot when I was a child and feeling lonely. And I looked at that story and I said, what made me write that? And then I said, I don't care. Right now I'm in the process of just, you know, getting all those stories out of my system.
Yeah.
Then I will see what gets in the book and what's not. And I'm fine with that. Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of freedom for me to just allow myself to explore what should be in the book and what should not be. And then choose, you know, later on, allow that process to keep emerging and be okay with that. That it will not be a book that, again, I force it to be in 6 months. Or, you know, it's like, in 6 months, I should have a book. Da-da-da-da-da. No, I actually gave myself 2 years. I said it's going to be a long process and I'm okay with that. I want to experience the book. I want to be with the book. And there were moments that I just put the book aside. Mm-hmm. And then I learned that it's actually part of a writing process that you just put the book aside and let it sit for a bit and let yourself sit for a bit and allow your emotions, again, that being energy, mm-hmm. To process some thoughts that when you come back new to the book, you reconnect with it in a new way. Mm-hmm. And you just don't just focus. So for me, that doing energy, sometimes it's like, well, this is how you do a book. This is the way you have to do X, Y, Z, and right? And then we limit ourselves from finding joy. It becomes too limiting, and I believe there is a creative process. So for each one of us, and that's part of what I try to find with people, is how do you connect with your creative process? How do you create that freedom for yourself that it's going to be your way? How do you like to write a book? Mm-hmm. What do you need to tell your fear that it's okay to experiment with two pages or one page or one word? Right. Okay.
Yeah. You know, I love how you were exploring through these little stories, because I was working with someone who was having trouble writing like her big story. Mm-hmm. And she went on this writer's retreat, and the leader of the writer's retreat said, why don't we just start with little vignettes, like little stories. Yeah. And that's just a great, because it takes the pressure off you trying to finish this, like, you know, the great American novel. You're just writing like these short little snippets, and you never know like what's going to come from these little stories. I mean, it might not be something you use right away. It might be something for another book 5 years down the line.
Exactly.
Or a blog article or whatever.
Yeah.
It's a great idea.
Yeah. And it's, I think, you know, where the being energy, right, gets in our way, this thing that I'm writing right now has to be perfect.
Right.
Every page that I'm writing right now has to be perfect, right?
Yes.
And so this is one way. Or another way is like, you know what? Why should I bother, right? Yes. Why should I even bother? No one is going to read that. So what? Write the book that, you know, some people say it's not me. Write the book that you want to read. Or write the book that you care about writing. I didn't put the pressure with this book that I need to sell millions of copies. That was not my intention. Mm-hmm. I just believed in something. I believe that I come with an out-of-the-box idea that people are not used to think from the being and doing. Mm-hmm. And when I talk about it with people, they say it makes sense. That's exactly where I'm stuck right now. I was being promoted and I'm using those old actions and it's not working for me. Mm-hmm. Or I work with that person and I see them stuck, and now it helps me to see if they are in their being or in the doing, and how can I communicate with them. So I'm not saying it's the only thing, but it was important for me to share a message, and it came from a place of why, of purpose, and not exactly, you know, what I said before with my story of it has, you know, it has to come from a place of force, and that force just sometimes get in a way to enjoy the process.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say the editing part was horrible, reading again and again and again.
But you know what?
I did it. I read my book 10,000 times again and again.
But it takes a lot for people to even just get to the point where they have something to edit.
Yeah,
so you actually got something down, you know?
Yeah. So it's not every moment was a pleasure, but I just decided that I'm not gonna let those voices, and when I could hear them, I actually decided that maybe it's not the right time to write right now. Mm-hmm. Because that's when the being energy is getting in my way. Mm-hmm. And it's not gonna create anything good anyway. So I just removed myself, and that's part of what I'm teaching people. When you when you identify that voice and you know that right now you are not able to convince it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So right now I look at the computer and it's like, oh, I'm so bad in English. I'm never able to write something good. It's like I am a full loser. Okay? So I have that conversation. I know I will not be able to bring common sense to that voice.
Yeah.
So here is what where I can find choice or control.
Yeah.
I just remove myself from the premises, as we say. Just remove yourself. just go and just let go, because that voice will stay with you and nothing good will show up. So there are ways to work with those voices.
Yeah.
You can do that with coaches. You can read books about them. They are being called the inner critique, the gremlins, the saboteur from sabotaging in French. So there are ways to learn how to work in what I say, lower the volume of the saboteur. You will never be able to get rid of it, but you can learn how to lower the volume.
You know what, Noah? I've talked to so many people about this. And what's interesting is I was talking to a psychotherapist, and I don't know if I got this idea from her or someone else, but what I started doing is questioning. I would actually write to it. Like I don't know how to explain it. It's almost like I'm writing back and forth between me and the voice. Like I question it. Like why are you feeling this way? And I'll just kind of sit and just like hear it and write it out. And I'll literally like write out this conversation I'm having with it. Because a lot of times it's fear. It has some type of fear, and it's really trying to protect me from being hurt or disappointed or whatever. But if I question it, because yeah, you're right. You can't really silence it. It's always going to be there. But I found that really helps me when I.
Yeah. So really, you know, it's like, I want to be happy. You're never happy all the time. So it's the same with those voices or things that we have. Yeah. We can learn how to lower the volume every time they show up. And it's not always working. There are some days that you just cannot. So two ways that I teach people I work with. One is you can think about yourself. You already published the book and you sit there, I don't know, somewhere in a beautiful, I don't know, next to a lake.
Yeah.
And you are like 40, 50 years forward. Uh-huh. And then that future self is talking with your saboteur. So you're actually removing yourself, the one that doesn't have control to communicate with that inner critique, the gremlin, the saboteur voice, and you bring your future self that already published the book, that already felt the success, that already had the joy of just having a published book. You know, it's so much fun to say, hey, this baby is mine. So from that place, right, from that joy, you have a different way to communicate with the saboteur. So that's one way that works really well.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's really hard. And then you just remove yourself. Just remove yourself from the situation and come back to it later on when you feel that you are willing to have a different conversation. Mm-hmm. So sometimes we just need to, you know, see where we are, how far we went, how high the volume of that voice is.
Yeah. You know, we are almost out of time. Oh my gosh, I feel like there's so much more I could talk to you about. But I want to go back to this idea of processing your emotions through writing, because I think this is really important. Because I believe in free writing. It's a technique I use with my students where you just kind of, you sit down and you time yourself for like 5 minutes and you just literally write whatever is in your head. I call it like mentally vomiting on the paper.
Yeah.
Whatever is in your head, you just write it out with no judgment.
Exactly.
No, nothing. Because that's a great way to process your feelings. And I like to free write when I'm typing. And sometimes when I'm angry, you can like tell me like all this nonsense.
I'm the same.
Yeah, but can you talk a little bit more about how you were able to really process some of your emotions through your writing?
Wow, that's, you know, now it's you brought me into a world less. Thank you. Wow, how do I do that? I feel like I'm somewhat like you. I am that person, and really, I think what was cool about writing the book is to learn consistency, how to let go of distractions and noises and show up every day or every whatever to do the work. But kind of like my tendency, my autopilot of writing is that I get so excited with an idea. You can see, if you see the video, you will see that in the background I have post-its. I love working with sticky notes, that's with it. Post-its. and my brain is like, the way I think is like workflows, okay? So I have different workflows. And then, so I get excited about an idea and I just like sit and I start typing really fast, and it's horrible English mostly. It will be very crappy. But I just like throw up, as you say, the idea on the page or two pages or whatever. And then I just put it aside. I don't edit it. I just put it aside and I come back to it later, because I know that in between, in that nothing of not writing, I keep working on my ideas, and mostly when I run or listen to something or read something. So I put it aside to sleep a bit, and then I come back and I keep working. So I'm not sure I answered the question about processing the emotion, but I think it might be just that emotional way of typing that gets me excited. Yeah. And so there is that idea that I'm getting excited about. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like vish, I need to get it out. Yeah. And then I come back to it and keep retouching it so that's my process, that's my way, and I become better with it and learn some from the editor that I worked with, you know, how to, when I saw her corrections, how to be even shorter with sentences, you know, all that good stuff you learn along the way. But this is more of a skill that you learn when you write just more and more and more. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. I like that idea of like just writing without judgment or editing, letting it sit. And then you come back, and I call it like the cleanup. You start cleaning up your vomit. You gotta see, you look through there and you see if there's something you could use, and you start to like fix your sentences or your grammar, whatever. So yeah, that's great. I love that.
Yeah. And I just will say that I think that my creativity, when I'm in that space, it shuts down all the other voices. Like there is no room for anything else but my creative mind. And then it's like, okay, I'm so excited. So there is nothing else there to interrupt me. Yeah. And if my kids will ask me a question, I will like,
you know, that's
like called, when you see me typing like that, do not ask me a question.
It's called being in the zone.
Yeah.
That's great. That's great. So Noah, do you have, cause we're running low here. Do you have any like final words of wisdom or encouragement for the writer who wants to start the blog or mm-hmm. start the book, and you know, they're feeling a little discouraged?
Yeah, I say just start, because what we feel is really not good is not how other people experience that. And there were many situations when I released something to the world and I just learned how much it touches other people. So for me, it's always, you know, I actually learned that from speaking, right? So in speaking, they say it's not about you, it's about the other people. So mm-hmm. remove yourself. That's the beyond leadership, by the way. That's why I call it beyond, because you look beyond yourself. It's not about what I get from it. It's what other people can get from your writing. If it's an inspiration, if it's connecting with your story, if it's just one sentence, you know, sometimes when I coach people, I say, what is your takeaway? And they say something that I didn't even expect it, right? You never know what's the takeaway. We think we know, but we assume we know, but we do not. So come from a place of what it is that I can give to other people. Come from a place of kindness, from selfness, and then the joy will show up. That's what I believe.
I love that. That's beautiful. Oh my goodness. Thank you so much, Noah.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on your show. It was fun.
I love talking with Noah. That was just so much fun. She's very honest, and it was very enlightening talking with her. So I hope that you were able to take away the importance of embracing the being energy, because a lot of times we stay in that doing energy. We're always taking action, taking action, taking action. And although taking action is important, I believe that taking inspired action is probably more productive than taking action out of, how should I say, action out of the out of this energy of stress or anxiety or this energy of I have to make this happen, right? So if you take the time to just breathe, kind of get into that meditative state and just be and allow the inspiration to come to you, and then you'll know the more precise action to take, and then again get into that being energy and allow things to unfold. So I hope that you follow Noah on her social media, on her Instagram, and check out her website for sure, and contact her if you would like to work with her to help you get into that being energy. Thank you so much for tuning in this week. Remember to visit zazo.com, sign up for my weekly newsletter, and you can follow me on social media. I'm at Twitter at Ebony Haywood and at Motivation to Ride on Facebook and Instagram. And I will see you next week. Bye-bye.